Hello, everyone. This is Diane again of Lady Di Yarns. I have here a dear friend of mine. I'm going to have her introduce herself. It's been a while since we've done our last podcast, but we had the holidays, we had the winter, and now we're in spring. And unfortunately, in Boston, on April 3rd today, we have had about 1 inch of snow, and we're getting about 8 inches tomorrow. So what's the best way to start our day by having this amazing podcast? So I'm gonna have you.
Oh, hi, this is Judy Scott Hammerquist of Boston.
So Judy, today I just wanted to talk to you about your experience of knitting. You've been knitting for a long time, right?
Yeah, I've been knitting my godmother first taught me how to knit when I was 5 years old. It was just something to do to keep me occupied, because I was fidgety and solemn and whatever.
So what did you make? What was the first thing you made?
It was a red doll skirt.
What?
It was very beautiful and ruffly, and it was probably ruffly because I kept adding stitches and not knowing what I was doing.
Still have it?
No, I don't have it anymore.
You don't have it. So you started out with a doll skirt, and like what did you move on to as you began to knit more?
Well, you know, I was just thinking, I always loved handicraft. So I used to sew doll clothes, and I used to do macrame and things like that in between. And then I got back to knitting when I went to college in Worcester, Mass, which was cold. Oof. Really, really cold. And then I knit myself a 12-foot scarf, and I named it William after my father to keep me warm. And then after that, when I got out of college, then I started knitting in earnest. So it's been about, I would say, about 42 years.
Wow. I've only been knitting, I think maybe like for 14 years. So I still feel like I'm new. I think I know a lot of people in our knitting group that have been knitting for a very long time. Like you, you know, I enjoy knitting. So what are you working on? What do you have on your needles today?
Oh my goodness. I have several things. I always have too many things. But I have three sweaters that I promised myself to finish this year. Mm-hmm. Two are for other people. One is a great big cable-y sideways knit cabled sweater in purple Malabrigo.
Wow.
Which is glorious. And I'm just almost done. Except that I decided I didn't like the ribbing, so I'm taking it off to redo it, and I can't figure out whether to make buttons or a zipper.
It's the dilemma of every knitter, right?
Crazy. And then I'm making a shawl for a friend's 60th birthday in June, and I'm finishing up a sweater. It was called the Caramel Pattern. It's a really cute swing open sweater in stripes of Elspeth Lavold silky wool. And I'm making it for my mom, who's had a stroke, and it's easier for her to put on things she doesn't have to button or zip. And also a top-down top for myself in purple bamboo.
Wow. You're knitting not only for yourself, but other people, which is what we always do.
Yeah.
So you have been knitting for a very long time, so I'm sure that you have a lot of insight. Barbara did an episode with me a couple months ago, and she has been knitting a long time too. And so what is your experience thinking about when you started knitting, about particularly, just, you said you were out in Worcester, but like in Boston, like what was it like with the yarn stores and people who knitted? Like, what was that like for you? Did you do knitting groups? I mean, knitting groups are big
now.
No.
In fact, it was a pretty solitary experience back in the day, as we like to say. And the only place that I could really think of going to was that shop in Harvard Square.
Was it Wilcott?
Wilcott. That was the only place to go. And in fact, Wilcott was the first place that I spent real money on yarn.
Yeah.
Because before, it would just be, all you had was acrylics, mm-hmm. red coat. Stuff like that. And so that was basically it. Then the internet came, and that was a big thing. My first knitting group was an internet knitting group, a group of women that I'm still friendly with, called Variegations. Okay, the group was called Variegations, and it was a listserv on Yahoo. And there was a group of women, and we would just chat back and forth. And that was my actual first knitting group that I was involved in. And then there were larger internet groups back then, and they were all listservs and pretty clumsy, but people would post their postings, and that's actually how Yarn Harley got her start.
Really?
Because she would post her little funny stories on this Yahoo group.
And there I was did about not a, know that.
Yep, and there was about 1,000 people on the group at one point. And that's how she got to be famous. And, you know, back then, whenever I wanted to laugh, I would do a search for Yarn Harlot so I could reread the stories. Well, and then, of course, at a certain point, she started writing her books, and we got famous, and... That's how she got her start.
I did not even know that. Yeah. I am, you know, thinking about that. So that was probably, what time was that? Like 2000?
Yeah, 2000? About 2000.
One of the things about Lady Di Yarns, one of the things that I've noticed about starting a yarn company or trying to make a name for yourself in the yarn industry now can be quite difficult if you weren't in the market early in the game.
Yes.
I think about Madeline Tosh or the Plunky Knitter or all these other indie dyers are now big name people. They entered the market at a really, really good time when the internet was starting to become popular, Ravelry
yes.
was founded, and then it seems like everyone's trying to play catch up, so you really have to have a niche now, it seems like, in the yarn industry to really kind of make it big. There's tons of people out there, I've noticed. Compared to maybe when you were knitting during college and stuff like that, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, nothing. When I was in college, there wasn't anything. There wasn't anything out there. There wasn't any connections. There was Vogue knitting, and and I wasn't even into it that much. But, of course, at one point, I did have a subscription to Vogue knitting starting in the 1990s, and that was one way to determine what was a better yarn than, you know, the acrylic stuff. And red coats. And I think you're probably right. You do have to pay catch up to some extent. But there's still that opportunity there.
Yeah,
you
I
know.
Agree.
And you know, it's better than nothing, and the time that you may have lost in not starting in the year 2000 when you were probably a little chicken, you sort of make up for it by the fact that there's more opportunity and there's more venues for you to cast your net upon the waters and to make yourself known.
That's actually really interesting. So before we get into like the next questions and stuff, I want to mention Windsor Buttons.
Right? Windsor Button.
I posted this thing on my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, and I was in the Downtown Crossing area maybe last month, a month and a half ago. And the building is still sitting there empty. And it's just, it was one of those places that, you know, it was 100 years it was in business. And all of a sudden, it's just gone.
Yeah.
And you see Windsor Buttons and you see that they didn't put a restaurant there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the question that a lot of people ask, you know, are yarn stores opening or are they closing? Or are they... stable? What do you feel like? I mean, in Boston, we're very lucky to have like four or five yarn stores within, you know, less than 10 miles each.
I think that they're stable at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the, you know, there's a lot of problems with the industry in that way, because you have to constantly bring in new knitters, and you have to teach new knitters about the value of a good yarn. You know, you have to let them know that knitting is an art and it's a pleasure, and the materials are equal to what you want your finished product to be. You know, if you're gonna spend, you know, 60 hours or so making a garment, you don't want to use crappy materials. And sometimes it's a bit of a sticker shock for a new knitter, but you've got to let them know that this is the deal. And you've got to sort of train people or teach them that it's better in the long run.
That's very true. I really miss Windsor Buttons. I have to say that you could not only just get buttons, right? I mean, you had yarn. There was always something.
Yes.
And it just wasn't, you didn't know, they didn't have fabric. They had, if you walked in, you ripped your shirt, you ripped your pants, whatever, you get a patch.
Yep.
If you needed a button, button felt off, you could get it. If you wanted yarn, they had from Red Heart yarn all the way to really expensive yarn. It was a whole array. So I feel like it was a staple in Boston. As much as I love all of my yarn stores, it's just one of those stores that you just miss. And so it's just really unfortunate. So I kind of want to just change gears just a little bit and talk to you about something that I had mentioned in my first podcast. And that is, I spoke about the lack of diversity in the yarn industry. You know, you and I, two African-American women, both knit. I know that you've knit longer. And you've been around a little longer than I have as well. And I didn't really notice it until I started doing the trade shows and doing the big conferences for the business. And then when I started looking around a little bit more, I realized that, you know, there's this level of lack of diversity. And it seems that people are more content with it when it doesn't affect them, or they don't, or if their people or if their gender identity, however they identify as, is represented, it's... You wouldn't necessarily not say care about it. You just wouldn't necessarily talk about it. And I came across this magazine at like a yarn swap, and they had used the N-word to describe the color black.
No, you're kidding.
No. And I have it. I'll have to show it to you.
Oh, my God.
And that was like in the 1930s or 40s, right?
Okay.
So, and if you think about knitting publications from beginning, from time publication started, let's say until the 1990s or 2000s, right? You really did not see a representation of diversity.
No.
And that just included, I mean, if you look way back in the day, that included Life magazine or even Vogue magazine, or you didn't have Latinos, you didn't have Blacks, you didn't have anyone who wasn't white or male. You know, a white male, a white female represented. But our demographics in this country is changing. And what I see now is that a lot of knitting magazines do not have diversity as a focus at all.
Right.
And some people will say, well, there's other levels of diversity and that are happening in the knitting world. You know, you have more indie dyers. But when we really break it down to the demographic of America and where America is going, the yarn industry is lacking extremely when we talk about publications and we talk about photos. What is your intake on maybe the diversity evolution or the still the lack of diversity in the yarn industry? What are some insights that you might have for people?
I'm not really quite sure why there's such a lack of diversity or a lack of the discussion around diversity. Sometimes I think that knitters are content to just think, well, all knitters are nice, so it's okay. Well, not all knitters are nice. I mean, I'm sure there are knitters out there that support Trump, but that's their bag. I think that what the yarn industry needs to do is to wake up and take a look around what's going, because there are a lot of certainly black female knitters out there. You know, if they were to go to Ravelry, there are a lot of groups of black women that are knitting and spending a lot of money on yarn. And those are the people that they need to reach out to.
You know what? I had a follower on Facebook contact me about 3 weeks ago. And she mentioned this yarn group on Facebook. And she was like, you should absolutely get connected with this group. They're always looking for new yarn. I think your stuff is great. And I told them, I said I hadn't heard of this group. It was I forgot the name. It's like Fine Yarn and Concierge. And she said she said, I only buy from minority businesses.
Wow.
And I said, you know what? That is the power that minorities are starting to have in our society, not just in knitting.
Right.
I have mentioned this on our first podcast, that when you combine African Americans, Latinos, and Asians, the amount of money that we spend on consumer goods is about $2.3 trillion, or a little bit more. We're a buying power in this society, yet images and products are not reflective of this demographic. So a lot of people are becoming socially conscious about where they spend their money.
Right.
And one of the things that I intend to do in the yarn industry for my business is to focus on the diversity of America and the diversity of our knitting community. There are a lot of African-American women and a lot of Latino women who knit.
Yes.
And when we connect and we see each other.
And crochet.
Yes.
And crochet a lot.
So when I had mentioned.
We can't get leave out them.
So right. So, but this is the other interesting thing. We say crochet. So when I mentioned about the lack of diversity, I had someone say, well, don't more African-American women and minorities crochet? What difference does that make if you take the crochet magazines? We're not represented in there either.
Oh, so definitely not there. At least in knitting magazines, they have models and stuff.
So exactly. You know? So I find it very interesting. And when I went to the TNNA trade show for the first time, I actually saw a lot of minority designers.
Wow.
That you would not have heard of because I don't necessarily know if they're given that opportunity. And I love the yarn industry. There are some great companies who are partnering with great designers, great dyers, great, you know, just great podcast people. And I feel that some companies are starting to realize the importance of diversity, and others, maybe they don't see it, or maybe that they're content. And so for me, I feel optimistic about the industry, but at the same time, I'm just kind of like, when do we come full circle as far as, like, the change?
Exactly. I think that people have to realize that it's important. It's an important issue. And, you know, one thing that bothers me when you talk in terms of designers and you didn't know that there were all these black designers, a lot of the black designers don't let you know that they're black. And I don't know how that would come about. It's almost as if, oh, we can't discuss race in the knitting world. I didn't know. I wouldn't know Shirley Patton was black, and I would like look and see. Oh, I gotta find. Years ago, I was like, I think she might be black because I know it was a Vogue issue where the designers were actually modeling their designs, and I was like, who is this black lady? I said, that's Shirley Patton. I'm like, I would never know, you know, what her race was, and people would say, of course, oh, it's not important. Well, it's important to me. Yeah. You know, I would like to know just so I could direct my dollars or direct my support. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to blindly follow. I mean, you know, if it's some ratty-ass design, I'm not going to like it one way or the other. But if it's a black person or a person of color, I would like to support them. So there's got to be another mechanism where we can make that that discernment.
You know, I feel that when I first started as an indie dyer, when I did little pattern designs and stuff, the first inclination that I had, which is, you know, kind of unfortunate, and now I'm against doing it, but I would say I would need to have a white model because the industry is white.
Oh,
I would
really?
Need to, yeah, I did when I first started. I'm like, I want to sell my yarn and the knitting thing, so I need to have someone white holding it up because, you know, that's what I see in the market. And then I realized that no, like, this yarn represents me as a person.
Right.
And I want people to know who I am. I'm proud to be an African American.
Yeah, of course.
I'm proud to be a Bostonian. I'm proud to be a knitter and everything else. So I didn't want to not even sell out, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
I just changed my focus on, like, I realized that there are a lot of minorities who knit.
Right.
And that is a huge market. And it's not just even a market, but we deserve the right amount of attention, seriously, that other people do. And going to the TNNA trade show and being the only African-American business owner there.
Wow.
Out of 200 plus vendors, I didn't even see one Latino, and maybe I saw two or three Asians, right?
Yeah.
And then I didn't see any other shade. And so for people to walk around acting like there's not a problem and just to go on about their day, that was also extremely disturbing.
Right, right. Well, you know, I remember when you first started out, you had that little caricature of yourself.
I did.
Which I loved, and I missed it. I missed the little lady.
But I have a sheep now. I have a sheep now with the fro.
Yeah.
And you could tell that it's a soulful sister because I said to my friend who was an illustrator, I said, take a sheep and take Pam Grier and put it together.
That's excellent.
So, you know, I wanted to make sure that people knew. And I am trying to find a way to use that little avatar from the beginning days. Like,
right.
I want to use it, but I want to use it maybe on a bag or something
yeah,
else.
Yeah, maybe a bag or maybe on a pattern.
Exactly. You know, my best friend did that.
That was a cool avatar. But do you think now that you have shifted or trying to focus your yarn with an urban vibe, do you think that that sends a signal to people as well?
You know, I think it does, and it's a two-part thing. So, you know, a lot of minorities do live in the city.
Yes.
Right? It is urban. We congregate in cities. But you also see a shift in non-minorities living in the city, which is perfectly fine. But the urban aspect of my yarn and really deals with the graffiti. You really don't see a lot of graffiti in the suburbs. You see graffiti and street art in the city.
Right.
And so when I say urban-inspired yarns, it's really about the street art. It's really about the graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
And my focus is definitely on minorities because we deserve the right amount of attention just like everybody else.
Right.
And it's also this demographic of younger generations who are knitting, like this hipster generation.
Right.
And where the industry tends to cater to a much older white female demographic.
Yes.
And you have to think about how do you keep yourself going in an industry where things are constantly changing and shifting? This mm-hmm. younger generation is going to get older. We're much more independent. I mean, let's just take women, for example. I read an article that, you know, the single woman, being a single woman, we have the most, our vote for this election is more important.
Mm-hmm.
It's the strongest. And so when you think about that type of demographic and the shift, think about like what they like and what their appeal is. So I think that the industry has been content and not necessarily thinking about the future.
Yeah.
And so when you're content with what has been happening, you lose sight of what's happening, where we're going in the future. So that's where my yarn company comes in. It's not mm-hmm. just urban inspired. It's this, we know that the majority of people are moving to the cities. There's
right.
a shift. So why would I have everything focused on designs and yarns that are not people who don't live in the city would understand?
Exactly. So. Yeah. You know, speaking of which, there was like this woman on Facebook who was this African-American woman, and I think her name was Rosanda, and she's selling these amazing crocheted hats with matching earrings.
Yes.
And they were like, wow, because I don't crochet, and I keep trying, and eventually I'll get there, but it's just the look and feel of these are was just amazing. And she can't keep up.
She's a businesswoman.
She's a strong businesswoman. She's doing it herself. And like around Christmas time, people wanted to order two or three sets at a time because they're matching crocheted earrings with hats, you know, big Tams, floppy hats. Gorgeous, gorgeous work. But definitely, you knew it was made by a black person. It was a definite cultural vibe about it that was stunning. And people were buying it like crazy. She had to stop and just say, I can't take any more orders because I wanted to order some.
Yeah.
You know, I could make it myself, but I thought, why bother when she's done this stunning work?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's a definite urban hip style. You don't see this stuff in Duluth.
No.
You know?
And I think what happens in the crafting world, I think a lot of minorities are embracing their own culture. They're not trying to, you know, we talk about when immigrants come to America, assimilating into American culture. And as their generations kind of have assimilated, they become, you know, African American, Asian American, mm-hmm. Latino American, or whatever, Indian American. I think there's a level of reclaiming your own culture that's happening now, where I don't feel that I need to conform to the past. I can take the designs and take the culture and the inspiration of what African Americans have contributed to American history and apply it to my business and apply it to the knitwear designs and things that I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about hip hop or we think about graffiti or we think about hipster, that was a African American culture. It was invented, it was created by the black Americans. So
mm-hmm.
it's been twisted, it's been culturally reappropriated in different ways,
yes.
but it's still, I would say it's still ours. And so for me, it's about taking that and reclaiming it within the yarn industry as the Lady Dye brand. And so there's a lot of work to do with the
yes.
business, but I think that we do have a long way to go with diversity. And like I mentioned before, I think that we'll see in the upcoming years, I think within the next, 2 to 5 years, maybe, yarn industry designers and people making that shift.
Yeah. And I think we have to start by doing a revolution, baby steps. But, because people come up to me all the time and says, oh, gee, I wish I could do that because I knit on the subway.
And
you
they
know?
Can do it.
I said, you can do it. And I give my number out. Come and I'll teach you. Or I could get you a teacher or go on YouTube.
Because people
Let's
think it's old fashioned.
Start.
People think it's old fashioned.
Yeah.
It's not old fashioned. It's hip. I think reality television shows, and I've said this before, have been like a driving force.
Really?
Because like Project Runway.
Oh, yes.
And Design Wars. Everyone wants to be an entrepreneur. And everyone's like, I can be a fashion designer. I can do this. So you see sewing classes, see all these crafting things
That's
happening.
That's right.
And
There's
so,
a lot of them.
So yeah. So tell me, so we're going to wrap it up soon, but
All
I
right.
want to know what you think is, what's hot right now.
I don't really. What do I think is hot?
Any knitting patterns or designs?
No. I mean, I can't say that because, I try to stay away from that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I like what's classics. But I do one thing, I think it's going to be hot. That I want to work on is knitting more bags.
Yes.
In Cambridge, you can't be able to take your plastic bags, so why not knit yourself some fly net bags
right.
to carry around, things that are quick.
They pass
and
the orders,
easy.
No plastic bags.
No
right?
more plastic bags. And they've done that also in Silver Spring, Maryland. I was down there and I was like, well, where's my bag? They're like, sorry, lady. So, I think that's a thing that we need to focus on. More bags.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, I enjoy. I have too many bags. I need to get
yeah.
rid of them. So my local thrift shop, Boomerangs, will surely get some.
Love Boomerangs.
So is there anything else you would like to say? This is great. It's so wonderful having you.
It's been great. I'd like to say is support your indie dyers. Support your art. And keep crafting.
All right. So that was Judy. I want to thank her for being on our latest podcast. And I hope to have another podcast out soon. There are so many things that are going on with Lady Dye Yarns, and I'm looking forward to filling you guys in. So maybe that will be the next podcast. So just have a discussion on where are the next steps of Lady Dye Yarns and where we're going. All right. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.